You're listening to the MLB Pipeline Podcast with your host, Ed Randall.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, and welcome to the MLB.com Pipeline Podcast. I'm joined by our fine draft and minor league experts, Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis. And we begin with the College World Series with Vanderbilt, Jim, again a force.
Yeah, exactly, Ed. You know, we get a rematch. It's only the third championship rematch in College World Series history. We had, before my time, I guess I was 5 years old, I do not remember Southern Cal beating Arizona State in 72-73, but I do remember Oregon State beating North Carolina in 2006-2007, and now we get Virginia and Vanderbilt rematching. You know, Vanderbilt, of course, the defending national champion. And the interesting thing to me is that even though it's the same two teams, much different feel than a year ago. A year ago, Virginia had the better team on paper. They were in better shape in Omaha because they played one less game to get to the finals. So their pitching was in better shape. But they lost 2 one-run games, and Vanderbilt won its first national championship. This year, that script has kind of flipped. Vanderbilt's got the stronger team. They've got 3 first-round picks on this year's club. And in number 1 overall pick, Dansby Swanson, their shortstop. 2 of their 3 starters will go in this championship series, Carson Fulmer and Walker Buehler. They've got a bunch of other guys who were drafted in the top 10 rounds. They've got future first-round picks, like a couple of their outfielders, Jaron Kendall and Brian Reynolds. And you look at Virginia, and they're banged up. You know, their best prospect is Nathan Kirby, who has only pitched once in the last 9 weeks since coming back from a lat strain. He actually lost on Friday. And their pitching's kind of a mess. They did what they needed to get to the finals, and they have probably a projected first-rounder for next year, and Connor Jones going against Fulmer tonight. But after that, it's uncertain whether they could get anything more out of Kirby. He, you know, his stuff was okay, but he didn't look real sharp on Friday. And then their best postseason pitcher has been Brandon Waddell, a 5th-round pick of the Pirates. But because they had to go the extra game, he pitched 5 innings on Saturday, so it's unclear how quick he could come back. So same two teams, but a lot different feel than it was a year ago.
You know, Jim, to me, I don't know if most valuable, if you were to redraft right now, I know, you know, if you're a scout, you don't look at just one performance, but the way Josh Zabors has pitched for Virginia, multiple innings, just shut down guy at the end. I mean, you've seen it in person. He was on the mound at the end to get them this far. How much has he been, you know, has he impressed you in terms of a guy who has seemed to really kind of grown into embrace the short relief, or I guess, you know, he went, you know, many innings the other day to get them here, but in general, that kind of short relief closer stopper kind of role.
Yeah, he had to go. I mean, it's kind of like a troubleshooter role. I mean, their plan to get to the championship game, and it worked, was to get as much as they could out of Brandon Waddell on 4 days rest instead of the normal 6, and he went 5+, and then Josh Spores went 4, and he's now pitched 15 innings in the postseason and given up just 1 run, which was unearned. I want to say supplemental second-round pick the Dodgers. I think he would go higher. The interesting thing from watching him the other day, he was not really lighting up the radar gun when he beat Florida. And I thought Florida was going to be the team that would emerge from that bracket, but he threw an awful lot of sliders. In fact, I think he threw 13 pitches in the 9th inning, 12 sliders. So, you see a lot more breaking balls sometimes at the college game, especially if you have an effective one, and he does. You know, he was throwing 91-94, and then the 8th, he kind of reached back and was hitting some 5s and 6s before going to that slider in the 9th inning. But, yeah, no, he's been very impressive. And, you know, I asked him after the game, you know, after going 4 innings on Saturday, you know, how much could we, you know, see you on Monday? And he says his arm feels great. He's ready to go. So I think we'll see a lot of Josh Spores in the final series, especially because that starting pitching is very uncertain. I mean, the best-case scenario for Virginia today would be for Connor Jones, who pitched their opener and went 6 innings, and his command was a little shaky. He got a no decision against Arkansas. Would be for Connor Jones to go out and win, and you know, I mean, ideally, you'd love to get a complete game out of him if he could do that. And then you rest Spores, and you could kind of get multiple innings out of him on Tuesday and Wednesday. But you know, out here, you know, it's one game at a time. You know, you see what happens. If they need to use Josh Spores tonight, they will. And, you know, they, like I said last year, I thought Virginia had the better team going into the final series, and Vanderbilt managed to win. And, you know, this Virginia team would be a pretty interesting story if they won, just from the standpoint that the last week of the regular season didn't even look like they'd make the whole NCAA tournament. They were only a number 3 seed in the 4-team regional, but they went 18-18 in April and May. I'm sorry, March and April, as they were dealing with injuries. And if they didn't sweep North Carolina in the final week of the regular season, they may not even have gotten into the tournament, because they went to the ACC tournament, they won a play-in game, and then promptly lost three games in their round robin. So I think if they don't sweep the Tar Heels, Virginia's not even in this, even in the regionals, and here they are, the chance to play for the national championship. They've won eight games in NCAA postseason. All eight games, they've scored the go-ahead winning run, sixth inning or later, and six of those eight games have been comeback wins. So it's a much different team from last year, which you had first-round pick Nick Howard, a couple of supplemental first-rounders, and Mike Tappy and Derek Fisher. But this team is just, every time you count them out, they seem to find a way to win. So it should be a pretty interesting series.
Late Saturday night, guys, Arizona traded Bronson Arroyo to the Atlanta Braves. He's currently sidelined and won't be back till mid-August. But also included in that trade, Jonathan, was Touki Toussaint.
Yeah, I mean, and that was the trade. I know there were a lot of people sort of at the big league level who were scratching their heads a little bit. You know, well, why would you take on a 38-year-old trying to come back from Tommy John surgery somewhat unsuccessfully and all that, and his salary? But and I give Jim all the credit. He wrote a really good analysis piece on the trade. John Hart, since he's come in, has really worked to rebuild the Braves farm system, in both by acquiring talent, picking up extra draft picks from this draft class, and really added a lot of talent. And Touki Toussaint is he's got as high a ceiling as anyone from the 2014 draft class. He's unbelievably athletic. I saw him at the National High School Invitational in 2014 in March with his team. And not only did he pitch unbelievably well, but he's also was a position player, can swing the bat. That bodes well for him in terms of learning to repeat his delivery and his mechanics. He struggled during his pro debut last summer, but was pitching well. And ironically, his best start was his last one with the Diamondbacks organization, where he went six shutout innings. It was really, really effective, and he has a chance to be a frontline kind of starter when all is said and done, as long as the Braves are patient, and they know how to develop young pitching. You know, they've done it over the years, and it's just another guy, for them to add to their now fairly deep and rich farm system, thanks to their efforts, and he was the key to the deal for the Braves to be willing to take on Bronson Arroyo's salary. They needed Touki Toussaint.
It's many characterize it as a salary dump by the Arizona Diamondbacks for the reasons that you just mentioned. And Phil Gosselin goes the other way from the Braves to the Arizona Diamondbacks. Let's now preview the Tournament of Stars, which last year featured a number of players who were top draft prospects this year. One of those guys was Ke'Bryan Hayes. And Jonathan, I congratulated his father, Charlie Hayes, when I saw him on Saturday at Yankees Old Timers Day. What a great player.
Yeah, no, very good player. And he was one of many, first-round guys. Kyle Tucker, Colby Allard, all played in the Tournament of Stars last year. And just to give people an idea, Tournament of Stars is really the first step in USA Baseball's process to form their 18 and under national team, which will compete in international competition at the beginning of the fall. They bring in 140 or so of the top high school players in the country. Almost all of them will be seniors in the coming year. There are a few underclassmen who will be there as well. And from there, they whittle it down to trials teams, and then they'll have workouts, I believe in Houston. They were in Houston a year ago, where they finally formed the eventual 18 and under team. But it's a great way for scouts to look at some of the better players against really good competition. There's a bunch of games. We're going to be broadcasting a bunch of games on MLB.com, so people, if they want to see a bunch of next year's draft talent, they should check it out. I'll just throw a couple names out at people, which probably are largely meaningless at this point to a lot of people. Alex Spies from Georgia, he just threw well the PGA National Showcase. He's a big right-hander from Georgia. Austin Bergner, Lopez, one of the top right-handers in Florida, will be there. And Jason Groom, a big lefty from Florida as well. He's pitching at IMG Academy. It's just a few of the names of guys who will be there starting. You know, they're getting there today. Workouts tomorrow. Games start on Wednesday through Sunday. And from there, USA Baseball starts whittling down that team to form the national club.
Talk, both of you, about the summer showcase circuit and how busy it is, Jim.
Well, I mean, as Johnson mentioned, I mean, Tournament Stars is just one piece of it. But, you know, the summer showcase circuit is really more important than what guys do in the high school senior season. You get to see these guys with bats in a lot of cases. You get to see them against better competition, more consistent competition than you're going to see during the spring, you know, especially if they're not in a baseball hotbed. But, you know, you had PG National, which is, I don't know if it's still ongoing because I've been out here in Omaha, but, you know, PG National was a big showcase down in Fort Myers. You now got Tournament of Stars coming up. You'll have events over the summer like the Area Code Games, the East Coast Professional Showcase. You'll have some all-star games like the Perfect Game Contest out in San Diego and the Under Armour Game in Chicago. And really, I mean, it even, you know, goes past the summer. I mean, one of the big events of the fall is the World Wood Bat Association tournaments in Jupiter, Florida, where I'll probably underestimate the amount. They have 100-plus travel teams there, and, you know, with many, many players who will be top picks in 2016 and also 2017, in some cases 2018, you know, going at, you know, they'll have 8, 12 games going at once at times. It's an unbelievable scene down there. You have scouts. There's as many golf carts as scouts, it seems, people tooling around trying to get from one game to another. But this is what you do. And I do think that, you know, compared to 20, 25 years ago, teams have a much better read on high school players because you can see them with wood bats against prime competition. You look at guys like in this year's draft, you know, Kyle Tucker, Das Cameron, Brendan Rodgers. You know, if I'm a pro team, I've probably seen these guys 60, 80, you know, maybe 100 at-bats over the last couple of years against good competition. You know, it's a lot easier to make an evaluation that way. It's still difficult because you're projecting these guys in the future, but at least you feel like you're armed with more data.
Yeah, and Ed, you know, I think Jim hinted at in terms of if they play in areas that you don't face good competition, or, you know, if you live in a cold weather area where you have to wait a long time and maybe you don't get a good look at a guy. I think Nick Plummer is a really good example. He's from Michigan. He kind of came out of nowhere in the summer and was just unbelievable this summer. Didn't have a great spring, didn't face good competition. The one game where he faced, you know, a good pitcher and everyone was there, he had a bad day. And that certainly hurt him. He was taken in the first round largely because of that summer evaluation.
It's what a great opportunity, though, for the evaluators on one side, Jim, and for the players to show their stuff. 25 years ago, or maybe even sooner, there was nothing like this at this scale.
No, definitely. I mean, there was not. I mean, it seemed like the first big event I remember, I guess, was Area Code Games. And East Coast Pro has been around for a long time, too. But, no, I mean, it's like I said, I mean, you know, using Nick Plummer as an example. I mean, you could see Nick Plummer, he broke out at last year's East Coast Pro Showcase, you know, against guys, you know, with quality stuff. You go see him in Michigan, you know, A, you're not going to be able to, you know, see him, you know, really play in any kind of nice weather probably until May, you know, which doesn't give you much time. And B, you know, most of the guys he's facing are going to be throwing 78, you know, 80 miles an hour. So you can't really make a judgment off that. It's crucial. I mean, especially for those guys in the cold weather states, I've had evaluators tell me, I mean, you pretty much have to have your mind made up on these guys before the spring, because what they do in the spring isn't really going to tell you very much.
Right, sure. Guys, thank you so much. On behalf of Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis, I'm Ed Randall. Thanks so much for listening to the Pipeline Podcast.